time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Bask yourself in glory, Oregon State. You showed up. There was a game. You showed up, and you absolutely drilled the Florida Gators. And I don't care what the circumstances, when you're Oregon State, hang a damn banner.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
You're not helping the cause right now, Dan. You're gonna get more nasty emails for this. Thanks for your apology. No apology, yes.
And SI's Pat Forty.
His answers said nothing. I mean, like, this was one of the biggest waste of time press conferences I've ever listened to. It's like, he doesn't know what he's getting into. He had no real answers. It's like, okay, dude.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I went with a pod getting into the holiday week. Happy holidays. Christmas coming, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. Or if you celebrate nothing, just worship a winter solstice. Go for it.
That's fine,
it's
too.
It's bowl season around Absolutely. Here. Or the Festivus for the rest of us on Friday.
There you go.
I don't really care.
The all-inclusive podcast.
We build bridges here, Pat. We build That's bridges. Right. I don't know. Whatever you want to do.
Building a community.
Whatever you want to do, do it. Bowl season was off. Anyone who said there were too many bowls just didn't have any fun this weekend. There were a lot of fun games. The UAB-Miami game off the bat was exciting to the last play. Troy, UAB won, but Miami covered. In the Bahamas, the San Antonio-Troy game was good. Oregon mm-hmm. State laid a licking on a Florida team that was, I've never seen anyone less excited to go to Las Vegas than Florida.
No kidding.
It's impossible to know what to make of this Florida team because Anthony Richardson play, backup Kitna got a child porn charge and is arrested and off the team. Terrible. And they're playing, you know, they don't have a lot of players. It wasn't a great team. Great win for Oregon State. I hate when SEC teams lose and it's just like, well, they didn't try. Like, no, mm-hmm. man, bask yourself in glory, Oregon State. You showed up. There was a game. You showed up and you absolutely drilled the Florida mm-hmm. Gators. And yeah. I don't care what the circumstances. When you're Oregon State, hang a damn banner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No. And they pounded them, as you said. I mean,
30-3.
Yeah, that was not close. So. Good for a great season for Oregon State.
Absolutely great season. They likely will end. I mean, they were 14th coming in. They'll probably move up on the year. So, you know, maybe they finish 12th in the rank. I mean, I don't know where that ranks on all time seasons, but it's got to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Smith, I mean, it's not like this kind of came out of nowhere, but they put together a good season. I'm looking at his record here. I mean, they were 7-6 last year, so I guess they built off of that. They did get better, but 7-6. I mean, he's 2-10, 5-7, 2-5 the first 3 years. And it's not looking like it's going anywhere. They get to 7-6, and then bang, here we go. So really a historic season for
– What did they finish? Would they finish at 9-4? What did they finish?
10-3.
10-3.
10-3.
Wow. Wow, so yep. that's their best year since with 2006 – they won 10 games. They went 10-4. But you really got to go back for a year where they, you know, as far as winning percentage, you got to go all the way back to Dennis Erickson in 2000. They went 11-1 and finished ranked in the top five, won the Fiesta Bowl. Wow. So, 22 years.
Yeah. I mean, pretty amazing. He was, it's a great season. And you wonder what they can build off of. Does this make them more attractive in the portal? Does it help, you know, with a little bit more in recruiting? But really, the portal, you sit there and say, hey, Oregon State's playing good football. Let's go. That's the thing. You can reload really, really quick. They're putting a ton of money into their program, rebuilding their stadium that was really necessary. So a lot of good things in Corvallis. And like I said, if you drill the Florida Gators, you enjoy it. I don't care what. You know, Billy Napier's first season, 6-7. So a lot of work still to be done there.
My one question I will say quickly about Florida is just extremely inconsistent effort. And I know they were missing a lot of players, but I'd sure like to see my team show up and try if I were A, Billy Napier, and B, a Florida fan. They need to rework the culture, as they say, a little bit there, I think, in terms of maximum effort.
I would agree. I don't know. Like, you just never know what to make of these games. I mean, you can make it as a referendum on bad. It was a bad effort. There was not a lot of pride there. There's no question. What does that mean for next year? Just really, really not sure. I will say this. Over the weekend, Reuben Bain committed to Miami. I know he was a guy Florida was trying to get pretty hard. Florida lost a few recruiting battles to Miami, so the Gators will tell you that it's because Miami's paying and they aren't. Who knows? I still find it almost comical that Florida State finished third in the recruiting rankings of Miami, Florida, and Florida State. And Florida State's the only program that shows any competency right now. But that's how it works. But a lot of head-to-head battles between Miami and Florida, and Miami, the U won most of them. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Wednesday, on National Signing Day. But that certainly was something that Dan Mullen was kind of fired for not getting players.
Mm. Yep.
So, it's just hard to read off of these things. Anyway, BYU beats SMU by one. Fresno completes this epic run. The huge win over Washington State, 29-6. Jeff Tedford's program is rolling. There's another one that you just sit there and say, man,
yeah,
that they're back. Bulldogs are back.
Yeah, that's super impressive. Jeff Tedford is just an extremely good coach. I mean, you go back and look at his record. He ran out of steam and maybe wore himself out and wore people out at Cal. But he had Cal in the top five at one point. Mm. And then at Fresno, he's had two different tenures there that have been just outstanding. So that dude can absolutely coach.
I was looking at, I don't know why. I thought he was at Fresno State longer. He was only there 3 years and then hung it up and obviously came out of retirement. But he's had four seasons as Fresno State's coach and hit the 10-win mark in three of the four. Just, pretty incredible. Two conference titles to go with them at Fresno. So really impressive. And, I always wondered, what exactly happened at Cal, because he had them rolling pretty well. You know, in the last year there, they went 3-9. I don't know. You guys might. That was back in 2012. So I don't know exactly what happened. It sounds like, I mean, Pat said something about, wearing out the welcome a little bit. You know, when you're at a place for so long, I guess at some point either you get tired of them or they get tired of you or both, I guess.
Yeah. And that's, the last three seasons, things were kind of declining. But he had two 10-win seasons at Cal. Not that easy to do. Mm-mm. And one of them, as I said, in 2004, there was a big controversy about who was getting in the Rose Bowl between them and Texas, and Mac Brown basically lobbied his way in over Aaron Rodgers and Cal in that game.
So that is one of those years and one of those teams that I think we'll look back one day when there's a real playoff and go, boy, I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah.
Because you go, they lost. Like, they didn't deserve it. It's like they had Aaron freaking Rodgers.
And Marshawn Lynch.
They were all right now. You know, you want to point.
You know what?
I think Marshawn came later.
Yeah, I'm wrong. They had J.J. Arrington.
J.J. Arrington,
2,000 yards rushing.
But, I mean, just Rodgers. I mean, they had skill players all over the place, but they literally had one of the, I don't know, all time when Aaron Rodgers comes in, but he can't be too far down the list of all time quarterbacks. He certainly won numerous. Right. You know, this is Aaron Rodgers. Like, you think Aaron Rodgers was going to be scared if he had to go play some team? And that's one of the things. Like, you don't always know who these guys are and what they become. And that old Cal. So Cal football history. That's good for ratings. Talk that. That's always good. But no, it was inspired hire by Fresno because they. You know, Jeff has the health issue. He leaves after 2019. It's not a good season. Kalen DeBoer comes in and second year, they're 10-3. They had the COVID year. They go 3-3, then 10-3. Great season. He leaves for Washington. And they go back to Tedford. And I think that's not the easiest move to make. But program's in pretty good shape. And again, I don't think it hurts when you're trying to hit the portal and going, Aaron Rodgers, I was his coach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Right. Marshawn Lynch, I coached him.
That's in Jake Haener this year. He said, look, Jake Haener's stats were phenomenal. Yeah. He's great. So.
So that was pretty good. We got, let's see, what else? Boise won. They finish out a good season against North Texas. Southern Miss beat the Academics, the APR Rice Owls. Rice fans were mad at me, by the way. I got some.
Were they really?
Yeah.
First of all, A, there are Rice fans.
Yes.
Okay. And B, they're mad at you.
Well, there were a couple. I wouldn't say it was an onslaught, but when you make any light of the Academic success, I don't think they'd care if I was just like, yeah, team's not that good. But when I made fun of them for winning the APR, there's a couple passionate Rice fans. So
they need to understand where you, who you are, where you come from here. I mean, like, you would much rather cheer for like Tark UNLV than Rice for good Academics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, good for you guys. I hope you all become, you know, doctors and work at the Houston Medical Center and all that, but you know, whatever.
You're not helping the cause right now, Dan. You're gonna get more nasty emails for this. Thanks for your apology. No apology. Yes. Yeah. By the way, the Southern Miss, as y'all know, we talked about off air. I'm at Rick Cleveland's house, columnist and longtime columnist in Mississippi, and Southern Miss grad from around Hattiesburg. And we were talking last night about the Golden Eagles and Frank Gore Jr., who's kind of going a little bit under the radar, and man, I think he had over 200 yards in the bowl game and finished the season.
Oh, no. Hold on. I'm going to give you a stat, Frank Gore Jr.
All right.
Because if we were giving out small sample, 21 carries, 329.
What?
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I don't want to just go over 200. Oh, wow. I mean to be like, you
wow.
know,
no, a jerk. No, I didn't realize it was that much.
329 and two touchdowns. He also threw the ball.
Damn.
And not just once on a gimmick, 2 for 3 passing.
Wow.
Really? For 19 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, he's high school quarterback.
They must have been wildcatting him, huh?
Yeah. That wow. Frank Gore Jr., Frank Gore Sr. was, oh, my Lord. Frank Gore Jr. is not anything to cry about. And I imagine he also had like half of the Power 5 direct messaging him.
Yeah, directly, right.
So we'll see if he sticks around to Southern
Miss. Yeah, he ended up finishing over 6 yards a carry on the season, 1,382 yards. Really impressive. 9 touchdowns. And
he actually, he threw the ball 15 times this year. He was 8 for 15 for 191 yards and 4 touchdowns. Okay,
there you go.
How about that?
Texas A&M could have used him as quarterback.
They really could have.
Interesting. Does he go back to Miami? I don't know. Like, it seemed like a pretty.
I think a lot of people would like him.
Yeah, a lot of people, but I mean, he's from Miami. His dad is Miami. I mean, it seems like, geez, I don't know. Might have looked good at the U, but that's past mistakes. This kid can play. There's a bunch of them. Louisville also finally beat Cincinnati and Fenway. They had Deion Branch coaching. They didn't really have any coaches.
It was
run of the great.
That game, it was like, who is going to make chicken salad out of chicken you know what in that game, because both teams, interim coaches, like the whole staff had departed. And yeah, Deion Branch, who is not a coach, he was the director of player development, who I think was basically just in charge of being Deion Branch and saying, hey, I was in the NFL, I've got a lot of wisdom, I'll tell you how to act right, you know. But he steps in as the head coach. They win, and it's Cincinnati, like, they look like they had just practiced, like, for the first time together, like, 3 days before the game. I mean, they were a complete mess.
That was a bad game. That was a bad game. Yeah, they're calling up plays, like, you know, run down to third base, cut left, right?
It was so bad for Cincinnati that late in the fourth quarter, they're down, like, 24-7. They literally quit trying. They just ran the ball 3 times and punted. Didn't use their timeouts. It was like, we're done here. We are done.
Run to the pesky pole. I'll get you halfway. This was great PR by Louisville, is putting Deion Branch as the head coach, because the game was in Boston. So the media in Boston gave so much attention to – one of the auxiliary benefits of these bowl games, right, is like publicity, right?
Yeah.
Well, everyone in Boston is like, Deion Branch is coach and Patriot legend. And so everyone's like, Louisville. I mean, I don't know what that yields. More Boston recruits doesn't maybe help a lot. But I don't know. It was like, everyone was like, wow, this is awesome. We love Deion. So he had the home the home people in Boston as excited as they were going to get for the Wasabi Fenway Bowl.
I can't remember a non-countable coach being elevated to interim coach. I mean, you would think it's happened at some point, but I can't remember it happening.
No.
It reminds me of Alvarez getting
Alvarez and Bob Stoops.
There you go.
Yeah, Stoops coached the game. Yeah.
Yep.
Some of those,
Yeah, 9 days before the game, Josh Hurd, the athletic director, said, "We'll figure out who's going to call plays later." Like, they had no idea.
Good time. All right, my favorite game of the day, the one I watched the most, was the Celebration Bowl between the MEAC champ and the Southwest Athletic champ. And that was North Carolina Central defeated Coach Prime's Jackson State team in overtime. It was a really exciting game, back and forth. Jackson State tied it to force overtime on the last play and in a Shador Sanders pass to Travis Hunter in the end zone. Just a thing of beauty. Huck it up and let Travis Hunter be Travis Hunter. Whoever ranked him number one recruit was correct. That kid there was a great line in the game. I can't remember who was broadcasting. He got out there. They're running him, and they go, "It's going to him. They don't use him as a decoy when he's on offense." And sure enough, it's like, hell no.
Maybe he played his last down, I think, probably here in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. There's a video emerged of Prime on some kind of – I have no idea where these Coach Prime videos come from. It was like a FaceTime with some people.
From his in-house video production team. I'm convinced
his whole life is fake. I mean, he goes to the bathroom. I think there's a documentary crew, filming him on the toilet. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's cameras everywhere following him. And it's interesting because a lot of like us media didn't get great access to him. And I think we all know why, because he has his own media. He doesn't need us. And that was a issue at Jackson State. I wonder if they're going to be any more open at Colorado, but he does. He has his own media. I'm just, they're everywhere, man.
I don't think anyone at Colorado has the power to push back on Coach Prime.
Yeah.
No.
And then it's like, whatever. Well,
what were you saying, Dan?
He announced, he made a line where he started laughing. It was like he was taking questions. I don't know what this was, but he's like, "Y'all crazy. What do you think Travis is going to decide? Yeah. I can't even believe you people," right? He's just like laughing about it. I mean, how about this? Shador Sanders started for Jackson State 5 days after being announced as the starter for Colorado next season.
Yeah.
Like, that's
unprecedented. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was
a new era we're in.
Just like whatever. But they didn't win. North Carolina Central won. It was a really, really good game. Did anyone else watch? And I mean, I don't know what the heck you gleam out of this. Like, I'm not gonna sit there and be like, "Well, Coach Prime's this looks like this offense will work," or whatever. They certainly had a couple good players. But for the most part, Jackson State, there was some time management issues, clock management maybe at the end, but they basically just looked like a regular football team, like a good team. Like, I didn't see anything. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't see any of it. I was at a wedding in Chicago, and so I will defer to you gentlemen.
Yeah, well,
did you watch it all, Ross?
No,
I
saw clips, but yeah, good talk. Great talk. Yes. I saw more. No, let me tell you. I saw more stuff before Mookie and after Collier. The game from Prime's video stuff than I saw of clips of the game. Yeah, like he gave the pregame speech. He gave the postgame speech of the player who dropped the touchdown. I saw all that, but not the game.
The game was good. North Carolina Central was really good. They got a kid, Mookie Collier. That's a Power Five player. Like, there were some good players on the field, and it was just an exciting game. So I don't know. I like the Celebration Bowl. What the heck? And Coach Prime is like the best. As he finished, he's like some of his videos he puts out. He's like, "All right, play my theme music," or what is it? Because of theme music, or like, it's just he's got a theme song.
Yeah,
it's a theme.
What is it? What is it? What's his interest song? Is it the same every time?
Hey, Ross, can you look it up and play it? Just type in Coach Prime theme song, theme music.
You mean Sean?
Sean, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to say, you want me to play?
Not Ross. I'm sorry.
That's all
Sean,
right.
Like, just, it's on YouTube.
I see it, though. Yeah. I see it. It's on YouTube. I see it. Yeah. Yeah. Coach Prime unveils new theme song for 2022. Oh, yeah. And I see one. I see one video that says, give me my theme.
All right, you want to play it? Just count it and play it, and we'll listen to like a few seconds. All right, 3, 2, 1.
This is our new theme song of the season. Now give me my theme music.
Yeah. Oh, the video's great. I mean, oh, that's great.
Fantastic.
What? Yeah.
All right, that's good. It's Travis Hunter dancing. All right, I mean, people want to know why he's playing a different game.
Yep.
I don't know whether that game's going to work at the Pac-12, but it is a different game.
Right. Hasn't worked in the Celebration Bowl. He's 0-2 in the Celebration Bowl. Yes. But
MEAC. Okay.
But, hey, it is a complete blast of different energy
from
anything we've seen at the Power Five level. So, fascinating.
You know what we talked about, like, everywhere he goes, you know, him having TV cameras, and, that includes, obviously, the locker room. So we've gotten a peek behind something that we don't get in the media, in the public a whole lot, right, is like the locker room speeches and things that happen in the locker room that's always treated so privately and guarded so much. And he's like let everybody in the locker room, which has really been interesting. And it's part of this whole, I'm going to do things differently. I'm going to do things my way, you know, and it's interesting. Did them losing cost them the like mythical black college national championship?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Not mythical. Right. Okay. Not mythical.
Right. Yeah. Central wins.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Each conference puts their champion in the Celebration Bowl and winner is deemed the national champ.
I guess it used to be mythical.
It's as good of a playoff as
Jackson State way back in the day. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So never quite got that done. But whatever, got me to watch.
Yeah, you would have never probably watched that, right? Had Deion Sanders not been coaching in that game, would you have? Come on.
If I was watching TV and looking around and there was a close game at the end, I might. I didn't watch every down. I'm not going to lie and be like, I was really intrigued at this. It was just a good game. Like, it was just, they were back and forth. And here's the other thing about the portal. And I know this is part of what drives everyone crazy, but I'm sitting there like kind of watching for, it's almost like watching a high school all-star game. Like, except this was a real game.
Yeah.
Right. Like those Army All-American games are freaking awful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible. Yeah,
should be. Don't get hurt in this dumb thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you're kind of like, hey, oh, that kid's going to, you know, Tennessee next year. You know, I mean, whatever it is. And so you're kind of watching and you're like, all right, Travis Hunter's legit, and you know, Shedeur Sanders. I mean, I don't know. You're playing in the Celebration Bowl. It's not going up against. But then again, I've seen Pac-12 defenses. I mean, he was. I think he was like at one point he was 20 or 24. I mean, he's. So I don't know. And then again, the Mookie kid. There was a bunch of kids that were just like, all right, that kid's good. Man, that kid's good. I bet he's going somewhere. I'm still, you know, I've supported the portal. Because I just think, you know, I would have been fine if they made him sit out. They didn't. They made a decision not to sit them out so kids can just move all over the place. I don't believe either way it's some disaster for college sports, obviously. And in some ways, I just think it's like, I don't know, it just makes hope spring really, really quick at all these schools. And it's kind of an exciting time for a lot of people, like, you know, like Nebraska gets Jeff Sims out of Georgia Tech. All of a sudden they got their QB. And then Georgia Tech gets Hudson Carr from Texas. Maybe he goes there. Like, you think about the Bo Nix situation where he's like struggling at Auburn. He goes to Oregon and all of a sudden he's really good. Mm-hmm. Or Jaden Daniels at LSU, like the second life for some of these guys. Mm-hmm. And it's
Michael Penix,
right? Yeah. Bo Nix coming back another year. I don't know. It's sort of like this. I don't know that doesn't create a lot more excitement than I mean, I've never thought there was going to be some deathly negative about this, but it's kind of exciting, right?
Well, not only exciting.
Well, yeah,
right?
I mean,
I think it's brought a little more parity because these quarterbacks, aren't like sitting the bench. They're starting somewhere else. You know, they have free movement. So I think it's created quite a bit of parity. You talk about like, a good example is like the Alabama LSU game, right? Like Jaden Daniels, without Jaden Daniels, they probably don't win that game against Alabama. And it's just one example, but we've seen that all season.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think amps it up more is these guys are more proven commodities to the casual fans. You know, I mean, kids that are coming out of high school, A, are younger, and B, just haven't been seen that much. And so it's like, well, I've heard that kid is good, but I don't know. But if you've seen Michael Penix play when he was playing really well, you're like, oh my gosh, that kid can really play. That's a great addition for Washington. And then, you know, Bo Nix and so on and so forth. So for fans, this is like recruiting with less speculation, and fans already love recruiting. So this is just one more element to it. Now, again, the timing of it all is bad, and we're dealing with that this week with signing day, but just the amount of flux that happens in December is ridiculous, but that's the way the sport is right now.
So, and I think you maintain your high school hype. Like Hudson Card really didn't do anything in Texas that makes you think he's going to be great. But like Georgia Tech fans are like, man, that guy was ranked like 50th in the country. Like, you know, right? Just kind of gives some pop. So I did write about I've discussed the calendar before on the pod and gotten some reaction. I wrote a column about this moving. They need to move signing day. And I actually was impressed. So, you know, just to recap, look, you can't change the transfer portal. It's here. So you can complain about it, but it's here. The kids have to transfer before the start of the second semester. Basically, most of them are going to want to. And I think that's the healthiest situation for everyone. So you're going to have this wild player transfer market, basically free agency, occur in December and early January. And I don't know how you change that. And I don't think it's ever realistic I don't think it's legal to sit there and say coaches can't change jobs until some date. Like that's not going to fly, right?
Yeah.
So those two, you know, one of our issues is they're doing the free agency, the portal, they're doing the coaching carousel, and they're doing basically postseason football all at the exact same time, which makes no sense. The NFL spreads the whole thing out and it works great. The NBA, right? So the NFL does free agency, then the draft. The NBA does the draft and then free agency. You know, this have it a little different. But either way, it's spread out and you've got a better idea what you're constructing. College football does it all at once. So my theory is the one thing you can move is signing day. You move it to, say, February 15th. You let all these transfers find their spot. And then you can, at least kids who are signing a letter of intent on Wednesday, have some better idea of what their roster is going to look like, who's coaching them, maybe get a chance. I mean, I wrote about a kid in Detroit who is a really nice player, but he's got a bunch of Division I schools saying, yeah, we really like you, but we don't know what our roster looks like. Is my running back going to leave? Talking, you know, American. I got a running back. If he stays, I don't necessarily need you next year. If he leaves, I do. But then again, if some kid from wherever, Purdue or Louisville, decides to transfer down, I could get him. So, like, the coaches are stuck. They don't know what to do. And there's just a lot of uncertainty. So that's my theory to move it. I was actually impressed with the number of really influential people who reached out saying, we need to do this. Not that I invented the idea, but just agreeing with the concept that I, you know, hopefully we can come up with something. Now, the only thing would be early signings or early enrollees, like Arch Manning's going to go to Texas in January. You don't have to sign a letter of intent, just enroll in January.
Right.
So, and no one's flipping Arch Manning anyway. Those guys don't flip the early enrollees. So I don't know. I think it makes sense, obviously. And I don't know if there's other parts to this. We also lose the excitement of signing day, right?
Yeah. That's what really been stripped. You know, we used to be this build all the way through the holidays and through January, and there, you know, the crunch time of official visits in January used to be huge. Those last two or three official visits, and you lead up to the signing day, and we don't have that at all anymore. I believe around 80 to 85% of school or of classes are signed in the early period, FBS. I think it's like 80% or something. So we've kind of lost a lot of the drama of the original signing day. You know, this has been a topic with administrators for a while about the calendar and how to fix the calendar. And, you know, the right now the CFP, because of expansion, is doing like a whole exploration on redoing the calendar. And I got a hold of the kind of the working document a couple months ago. And unfortunately, Dan, it you know, there's no plans, I don't think, to move the signing day, or at least in the calendar. I, you know, it's funny, you talk about like eliminating early signing period. I think there are a couple options thrown out there by various parties, ADs, coaches. And one of them was move it up to July. Another one was move it back to January, or eliminate it all together. Those seem to be like the three options, or stay the same. And at least in the calendars I've seen, it's all going to stay the same. So, you know, the high level coaches, it seemed like, and the Power Five wanted this. They argued for it, partly because, you know, I guess late stealing of prospects, of commits. But it really just, as you mentioned, it just, all these things are going on at the same time. And it's just such a chaotic period of bowl prep, coaching change cycle, the portal now open. And then you lop on signing day on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. Everybody's like, well, I mean, you talk to coaches right now, how frazzled they are, how completely, you know, like going 18 different directions at once. And if you went to them and said, if you take this one piece out here, move it 2 months later, it might make your life simpler.
A little
bit. Well, but this is the way it is. It's like, that's just so often the college sports answer. Well, this is the way it is, and we just deal with it, even though it sucks. It boggles my mind that they can't find solutions to things that seem pretty evidently in need of a fix. And Dan, to your point, I don't think it's good for the players. I don't think it's good for the coaches. And from our standpoint, I'll just say it. Yeah, it's not good from a media standpoint and a detention standpoint.
Yeah.
Kids all want their big signing day. Well, guess what? We're just like, oh, gosh, it's Wednesday in December. You know what? We got 13 other things to do, and it's Christmas week. And, well, hope you pick the right hat, son. Good luck. You know, I mean, if it was February, we'd make a much bigger deal out of it. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, and how about playoff expansion when it arrives? So we're going to be playing
first-round games. Unbelievable.
This week. It's going to be first-round games this week. So then you lop on top of that.
Well, look, we're selfish, right? We'd rather have stuff to write about. But the reason we want to write about it is because fans want to read about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we don't write stuff that fans don't read about. And so as a promotional aspect for a sport, this is why the NFL does what it does. Mm-hmm. And it sits there and says, oh, we're going to have the combine in February after 2 weeks after the Super Bowl combine. We controlled it. Oh, then we got free agency. Then we got the draft. We run up that and we control the narrative, you know, and then we'll have schedule release. They do everything to control the whole year. And college football is like, yeah, no, we don't want to do that. College football spends way too much time, because they're administrators of all sports, comparing themselves to other sports instead of how the NFL does something. So they're like, basketball's got an early signing period. It's like, it's a different sport.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a different sport.
And that's the problem. They're not treating it differently in, you know, they're not treating it differently because just historically under the whole, you know, broad base and the NCAA model and everything. But that's a big argument right now. I mean, that's one of the big arguments, is we need to start treating football differently from a calendar perspective and rules perspective, compensation, athlete compensation perspective, all that. Like, it probably does need to be treated differently, and it probably doesn't necessarily. You know, we talk about it a lot, about the stress on the tethering of a college, you know, academics with big time college football. And there's such a stress with that tethering of those two things, and just feels like it's going to pop here soon.
I'll give you a couple of things on why this doesn't work. So I do think, to your point, Ross, they listen to the high end coaches. The high end coaches have too big of a voice in this. And it's not that I don't respect Nick Saban, and I'm not even sure his opinion on this, but let's just say Nick Saban likes the status quo, or certainly respect his opinion, but he is not the norm, and his players are not the norm. So he might sit there and say, look, the initial thing was, I want these guys signed so I don't have to babysit them in January. It makes my life easier. Okay, great. It no longer is your life easier.
No.
Okay, so that argument doesn't even work. And wait till you have to prepare for a playoff game in the middle. And how about this? Kids are transferring, right? So the transfer portal. Every coach hates that there's so many kids in the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. First off, I think The Athletic did the number, or somebody did the number. It's like 68% of the kids last year in the transfer portal moved from a level up to down. They weren't looking for greener pastures. Yeah. They were looking for playing time. Or they were over-recruited. They were misevaluated, mm-hmm. right? Or they were under-evaluated. And they're like, look, man, I'm Frank Gore, and I just absolutely destroyed everyone at this level. Maybe I should have been Power Five all along, and now I get my chance. What do you want to you want to hate on Frank Gore Jr. for that? If he even does that, I don't even know what he's doing, right? But, dude, you just did 326 yards and three TDs. You threw, you know, go ahead. Go for it. I don't have any problem with any of that. But also, if you have to recruit, I saw a Sam Pittman quote, and he was just talking generally. They tried to visit all 23 of their commitments in December. They lost like 15, 19 kids in the portal. Like how many of those kids could stay in the portal if you're in your office the weeks after the season and say, come in and meet with me.
Right. Right.
Right. And instead you're gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's what they put in that dead period, but it's only like 3 days. You know, it's like 3 days and you're supposed to.
Yeah, between the end of the championship games and portal opening.
Right.
Yeah.
It's only just a few days and it probably should be more. You know, one other thing why they, now that we're talking about this, my memory coming back to me about why they, you know, instituted the early signing period. And it was obviously was the kind of the big voices of coaches. But I remember also, you know, that players wanted to sign. So when they were ready, they wanted to sign. So I know there was probably a pretty loud voice from parents and stuff to do it too, because they just wanted to sign and kind of get it over with, I guess, so to speak. But like, you know, if we're gonna do that, then you know, move it to July or something when it's a quieter time. I don't know.
I mean, that's like they're like, well, there's two. Let's just end this circus, man. No one's getting through to Arch Manning right now. If you're committed and you don't return the text. I mean, come on. If you're really committed, it's not a problem.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, you can the players can control their recruitment. All right. And so I understand that. Yes. Okay. You're tired of being bombarded. Whatever. I mean, you can control that to a degree. And I would also say, okay, December 20th versus February 6th. I'm sorry. Wait 6 more weeks, 7 more weeks, and then sign your letter. The other thing, my problem with a July period, the younger you get, the less informed your decisions are, okay? And so if you're taking your visits during your junior year and making your decision the spring or the summer between your junior and senior year, and a lot of commitments are made then and they hold up, but there's also fewer and fewer informed decisions because people, they don't know what they want. I know this from my own kids who hosted recruits. And as they got on campus earlier and younger, they were like, they didn't even know what college was, really. They didn't know what they were talking about. You know, you try to talk to them, what classes would you like to take? They had no idea. So, you know, earlier, while yes, it may alleviate some stress, you may also be making more bad decisions or uninformed decisions, at least.
I even see the danger in the regular student, non-athlete, the early decision. So they have this system where the early decision, so you apply to a school, and you are locked in. The other schools will not take you. You're not even allowed to apply. You have to like rescind your application. So let's say you want to go to, let's say, you know, whatever. If your family always went to Vanderbilt and you just want to go to Vanderbilt, and I'm a legacy at Vanderbilt and Vanderbilt, and you apply early decision and you get in, you're locked in. Okay, it works for certain kids. But lots of kids will try to do it because they let in a little bit. They're trying to get a yield rate, these schools. And so they want kids that really want to come. They're trying to lock up kids the same way college football is. And so people are enticed to say, I'm going to gamble on going to this school, even though maybe that really wasn't the best place for me, or I would have got more financial aid here, or I just went halfway across the country. But early in my senior year or my junior year, I thought, I saw the U.S. News and World Report ranking or whatever it is, you're much better off if they could have all the kids. And look, this is not a big problem, right? But you'd be better off if at the end you're going, hey, this is actually the best move for me. And at this age, the difference between 7 months is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, your high school, it's like, and you might have been told your whole life, you need to go to Vanderbilt. You might be sitting there going, you know what? I just wanted to go to Ohio State. Like, I'm from Columbus. All my friends are going there. I fit in better there. I'm not my mom and dad or whatever. So you have this immense pressure on this thing. My other thing with these guys, the head coaches, why I think they could look bigger picture is the more mistakes you make, you're just feeding the next generation of the portal.
Yeah, right.
So the portal will get worse because you're grabbing guys that you actually don't need because you just added. And so it just is going to keep going and going and going, but it's a very different world. The COVID is a big thing. These guys playing 6, 7, 8 years, 25-year-olds playing college football. Right now, there is a lot of really good players that are going to end up in D2 and FCS and group of five who should have been in power five, but they came on late in their season. Mm-hmm. They had a great senior year. It's almost like there's like a proving ground. And then you're going to bounce in and play those last couple of years, which I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a different thing. Like, are you better off saying, hey, I'm going to go be an FCS star somewhere for 2 years. And maybe it's a little less taxing on my body as an 18-year-old than sitting on the bench somewhere. And then I'm going to jump and go play power five. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's a better route, but you certainly, it's going to make the portal matter.
Yeah. How about our ninth-year eligibility guy, Cam McCormick, the tight end at Oregon, was granted a ninth year of eligibility. He said he's doubtful he will use it, but, I mean, he'll be like 37 at that point. He'll have grandchildren, but...
Will Ferrell movie. Yeah, right. It's a Will Ferrell movie. Will Ferrell gets to USC finally in his ninth year. Yeah, he's not going to use it.
He said it is doubtful because the years it's been granted is for 24. So he still hadn't decided if he wants to play in 23, which would be his eighth year, but he's been granted a ninth year just in case.
How many degrees does this guy have?
Hopefully a lot. I mean, he might be like that. I'm sure we all know guys, you know, that 10 years after we left school or 12 years or 15, there's one guy that you went to school with who's still like living there and still, you know, like works around campus and. You know, that's the career college town guy. That's Cam McCormick, potentially.
College is the best decade of my life, Cam McCormick. He never transferred, right?
I don't think so.
He's been
at Oregon all that time.
That is a duck.
Yeah.
That's a loyal duck.
He should be a tenured professor.
He's the anti-tenured.
Yes. The anti-portal.
They're like, please hit the portal, kid. You're still not that good. Anyway, whatever. All right. So we're 40 something minutes into this, and we're going to discuss the NCAA got a new president, which
I think
Pat said in the pre-show shows how little this matters. Charlie Baker, the former outgoing governor of Massachusetts, will be the next NCAA president. They hyped up his former athlete experience. He played basketball. I think it was basketball at Harvard. Not sure what that relates to the modern thing. Someone's got to do the job. It's really a pinata job, and I feel like a politician's perfect for it because they're like, they used to half the people screaming at him anyway. So any thoughts on Charlie Baker, Governor Baker, taking over as the NCAA president?
Yeah, I think it was how little it matters is why it matters, you know, it's just a referendum on how useless the NCAA president is, as Dan mentioned, being like a well-paid pinata and putting a face on the association and getting up there at the Final Four and at the NCAA convention and trying to articulate some sort of plan or vision, which is largely outside of your control. The reality is the Power Five commissioners are the more important people in terms of what actually happens these days. So that's more where the power rests. But I do think a couple of interesting things here about the hire. One, it continues the trend of going away from campus leadership. It's like university presidents, ADs, you're the ones that got us into this mess. We're not counting on you to get us out of it. Because if you look now at the Power Five conference leadership, we only have two commissioners who are campus guys, Greg Sankey at the SEC and Jim Phillips at the ACC. The other three, had no real college background. Charlie Baker, no real college background. And I just think there's a real imperative to find different ideas and different mindsets to get some of these things accomplished, one of which is a political solution to NIL, transfer, blah, 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 that everybody complains about all the time. And so get a politician who's going to deal with the politicians who you hope will bail you out in terms of coming up with a legislated solution or legislated idea to how to handle some of these issues in college sports.
Yeah, I think they had their sights set on getting somebody politically connected in that world to maneuver around D.C. and in the lawmakers. It seems like that was goal number one in the search. They talked to a couple of other former governors, including one of Indiana, Mitch Daniels, I think was somebody they discussed things with. So
Purdue president now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Outgoing. Yeah. Anthony Gonzalez, even, you know, former congressman from Ohio. So there was a lot of political
Ohio State player
folks in the mix there. And I think it was all a goal, you know, that's what they wanted to get. It's been interesting, the reaction, because the reaction, there hasn't been a lot of reaction, it felt like, not a lot of big, strong reaction on either side. I think part of that is probably because, you know, we don't really know how much it matters. And like Pat said, the Power Five commissioners are probably have much more of a authoritative role than the NCAA president. I mean, during his Governor Baker's press conference introducing him, one of the questions from one of the media members, I think it maybe was Ralph Russo, the AP, was, what is your job? Like, what is this job? We don't really know. Like, we don't know what the job is. Another one of the questions was, why the hell would you take this job? You know, like, gives you an idea of what the situation is right now for him. And I think there's probably two main issues that he needs to tackle first. You know, number one is NIL, trying to get some college athlete bill pushed through in Congress. I do think they're starting to become, there's a lot of lawmakers starting to become more knowledgeable on the issue, certainly a lot more than was understood the issue 2 years ago. So I think there is a little movement, you know, for a college athlete bill of some sort to get pushed through. And then the second thing I think for him is FBS governance, which again might not involve him as much as the Power Five commissioners, but the FBS governance and how FBS is going to be structured. You know, the transformation committee is going to end up having recommendations. And, you know, it actually circles back, Dan, to what we talked about earlier about how football is different and should be treated different. And I think you're going to see the recommendations from the transformation committee on FBS governance is to have each sport more controlling their sport individually with an oversight committee of their own, like we have for football actually already. I think you're going to see that, the more of that. But those are the two issues, you know, FBS governance, some kind of NIL congressional bill.
Yeah, I feel like the commissioners and the courts, and not in that order, are going to determine a lot of this going forward.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Why'd you take this job? You seem like an industrious man. You went to Harvard and you're governor.
Yes.
Well, you could do something else.
Well, yeah. And the funny thing was, like, all right, so Ross did identify that, like, the two of the questions that really stood out there asked him. His answers said nothing.
No.
I mean, like, this was one of the biggest waste of time press conferences I've ever listened to. It's like, so, he doesn't know what he's getting into. He had no real answers. It's like,
no.
Okay, dude.
He didn't want to make news at all.
We're not sure what you're going to do. Yeah, we'll talk to you again in a couple of months. Try to figure out something before then.
Yeah. Make sure the women's weight room at the women's final four is just absolutely sparkling.
Yeah.
Please.
You know,
get a.
You mentioned that, Dan, you mentioned the courts. Is one thing we actually did have on our, I failed to mention it on our prep for the show. The little prep that we do is the NLRB, labor board, and the big decision last week. You know, I know people probably tired of like all these court stories, and a lot of people don't want to read them. But we are getting closer and closer to the big story, which will be college athletes deemed employees. And what happened last week was the labor board, National Labor Board, decided to pursue charges against the Pac-12 and the NCAA, and specifically USC, because the labor board only oversees and controls private schools. They pursued, they're pursuing charges and investigating those three entities, most notably the NCAA, for being basically for unfair labor practices, I think is what the exact charge is. And, you know, I there's a feeling that the administrative law judge will rule in the coming months that athletes are, college athletes are employees. Now, it can be appealed, so we're still at least a year, probably, it seems like, away from something. But this thing could be headed back toward the Supreme Court. And if it gets there, you know, we just saw what the Supreme Court ruled in Austin, you know, a unanimous 9-0 NCAA loss.
It'll be a massive, massive moment. I was, it's almost too complicated to bring up. We'll discuss it certainly this offseason, though. They become employees. It's a game change for the entire, all of college athletics, because it's not just football and all that. And, you know, I see the argument, but I kind of like how college sports operates. I feel a lot less in favor of it or sympathetic to it now that you can make money if you're really good. So,
yeah,
Pat, I wanted to bring this up quickly before we go. You pointed this out. Arby's is allegedly selling Arby's wrapping paper for your Christmas gifts. Arby's. You seemed excited about, should everyone on the 40 Christmas list expect an Arby's wrapping paper?
I've looked it up. There's something called the Arby's shop for $18.50 on sale, down from $22.95. You can not only get Arby's wrapping paper, which appears to have like a kind of a, you know, a piles of roast beef and cheddar sort of sandwich thing.
This is fantastic.
The real kicker is it is allegedly smoke scented.
Oh, come on.
You get the meat to look at, and you get the meat to smell under your tree. I've got to get some of this. I need it badly. My two sons who are coming home.
This is better than any gift I'm going to get.
Yeah.
We just, you know what? Just send us all a roll of the paper. We'll just hold it and smell it.
Amazing.
That'd be fine. Yeah.
Arby's sent it. How much for Pusha T to come sing Christmas carols?
I don't have a price for that, but like he should have a Cameo account to do that.
He should. I would pay a Cameo account of Pusha T singing like, you know, Holy Night, you know, to me. Or something like that. I would absolutely give me some. Come on,
great idea. Let's do it. Make it happen.
Our artist of the year, Pusha T. All right. Finally, this came out. Jay Arnold, who is a former Texas A&M defensive lineman, he's looking for a job in coaching. He wants to get into coaching, according to him. He sent out a viral tweet over the weekend that I think should land him a coaching job. Jay Arnold, former player, so he knows how to play. A&M, got some Texas recruiting ties. Somebody hire Jay Arnold, because this is a man of great thought. Here is his tweet. Taco Bell is the only fast food place I roll up to with no ordering game plan. I just let the menu speak to me. The bell will tell me what I need. My mouth may be moving, but I am just the instrument of a supreme design.
Oh, God.
Okay? So, Jay Arnold, this is some deep thoughts. Like, this is the kind of guy, this is the leadership in the world we need to our young men playing football. He just rolls up to Taco Bell, and I started thinking about it, and I don't go to Taco Bell very often, but I agree. Like,
yeah,
I go and you sit there and say, oh, I'm going to go into Popeyes. I'm going to get the chicken sandwich. Or I am going to McDonald's. I am getting the Egg McMuffin.
Right.
Taco Bell, you just get there and go, throw me one of them. Probably because every one of them is exactly the same.
Yeah.
But
right.
Is this the deepest thought a football person has had all year? I think Jay Arnold. Thoughts on Jay Arnold's Taco Bell game plan, which is no game plan.
It's you know what? I totally agree, because yeah, I may be a 2 or 3 times a year Taco Bell guy, but yeah, you cannot really just go in and say, I'm having the cheesy gordita crunch and I'm having the burrito supreme and the nachos Bel Grande. It's the menu is so overwhelming. And I guess to your point, Dan, it's all the same ingredients and packaged in different ways, basically.
Yeah, it is.
But there is no showing up to Taco Bell and having a set regimen. You gotta be flexible.
I disagree. I used to eat Taco Bell at least once a week during my high school days, which I can't imagine doing that now. My stomach is hurting just thinking about that. And like, yeah. Anyway, and I used to go in and get the same thing every time. It was
really?
I was getting a Mexican pizza. I was getting a Mexi Melt, and I was getting the Supreme Beef Chalupa. And those are my go-to.
Well, all right. I let it speak to me. I agree.
Yeah.
It says something, man. All right. Finally, we have a quick request for Sean, producer Sean. Out of nowhere, a young man named Ajani Cornelius, who is an offensive tackle for Rhode Island, URI, has become one of the hottest transfer portal players in the country. He has set a commitment date. He is choosing between Ohio State, Tennessee, Oregon, and Nebraska. Wow. Everybody wants this kid. Sean, did you play with him?
I did not, but I got very good intel on AJ.
Okay,
Cornelius.
What is it? Is he good?
Well, when he first rolled up, there was I think it was my first year out, and I was still keeping in contact with some of the other offensive linemen that I knew there. And, there was Evan Lovell transferred to Texas State. Nick Correa was all-team Northeast. So there were some good dudes on that offensive line that were taking over their regime. And we consistently had good offensive line. Like Kyle Murphy played with the Giants for a couple years. But when I was talking to him, they're like, you know, I'm messing around. Like, who's wearing 65 now? They're like, dude, it's this guy, AJ. He's the real deal. When he was a freshman, it was all COVID year stuff. So I wasn't super familiar. And then the tape shows, I'm like, oh, well, his feet are great. His hands are great. He has the frame. And then they even built him out still at Rhode Island. So if he goes to a bigger strength program, they'll build him out even more. He's got the mindset. But as soon as he walked in on campus, they were like, yeah, this guy is he's a dude. So and that's coming from guys that are dudes themselves. So he's a very impressive prospect to come out of Rhodey.
All right.
There you go. Good breakdown.
URI enters the chat. He's from Harlem and went to Archbishop Stepanak up in Westchester County, better known for basketball.
Yep.
But that's it. So there you go. URI.
Good.
Good job.
We'll have to get Sean's FCS championship pick later in the week, too.
Many years ago, my father went to Archbishop Stepanak. So I'll have to have, he's got some connections there. Find out some. He got excited when they started getting Duke basketball players and stuff from Stepanak.
Really?
All of a sudden, yeah. I don't know how good they were when he was there. All right, that's our show, because when we're down to Rhode Island recruiting transfer portal,
we're done.
We're done. Yeah. We're out of topics.
Peace out.
Officially up. We'll be back Wednesday. We will do a signing day show. We're hoping for some mayhem. Dylan Raiola, who's the biggest news this year, 2024 number one player in the country, quarterback, decommitted from Ohio State this week, maybe headed to Nebraska, where his family, his uncle works, and his dad was a legend, and that would be huge, but that's a year away. But we will do some signing day craziness on Wednesday, and we'll be back for Bowl Bonanza later, maybe next week, whatever. But we will keep subscribing and listening. Talk to you later.